Hello and welcome to our new podcast, The Drums TV Talks. I'm EDA editor John McCarthy.
And I'm TV reporter Hannah Bowler.
Each week we'll sit down with the decision makers, media owners, ad tech execs and producers shaping the future of TV to explain the role advertising has in funding the industry and re-establishing dominance as the best screen in the house.
So we're going to be explaining TV advertising in simple-ish terms without the complicated jargon. We basically want to make the TV ad sector a piece of cake to understand.
So, thanks for joining our TV talks. Anna, it's the Go Compare episode, and you know what that means, don't you?
Go compare! No, I can't do it.
Go compare, a girl who does the picture brush. I'm not good with lyrics, so only the tune is in my head. We can't do the jingle justice, and so we won't. But that brings us to the point of this podcast. Gio Compareo, the tenor himself. He's not been off screens for, maybe, is it 10 years? Been killed and came back again. People often found him quite irritating, and Go Compare persisted in using him because, hey, irritation is brand awareness, isn't it? Is it the Piers Morgan factor?
So yeah, that's true. Similar personalities.
Well, Go Compare, Gio Compareo, he is a bit of an arrogant man, but a few years back, the brand realised that people really liked the story of Wyn Evans, the real-life opera singer behind the character, and they brought him forward into the role. And he's one of the most familiar faces in TV advertising. So today I spoke to Paul Rogers, who's Director of Brand and Campaigns at Go Compare, and I was joined by his friend Garrett O'Reilly, Hearts and Signs, which is their media agency. And we go into how they've changed the sort of strategy behind Gio Compareo and how they're buying in new ways. The whole podcast was originally pinned around a smart sponsorship they were doing with ITV around family fortunes. It was an interactive quiz where people could answer questions extending the show. And it was instead of Gino De Campo, it was Gio Compareo, another beloved Italian. And I found it a really neat activation. A sponsorship is doing a bit more than you'd usually see on the TV. And what initially started as a conversation about interactive ads just got into Go Compare's love-hate relationship with Gio. Let's get into it. Thank you for hanging around. Let's do it.
How's it going, Paul? Good to finally get this interview going. There's Garrett. Hello, Garrett.
How are you doing, John? It looks absolutely glorious in Glasgow.
A bit much, isn't it? I was like, I need to shut the blinds. I'm burning before your very eyes. Usually I'm very angry about being on a Zoom call instead of standing in that for 5 minutes. But this is a special call.
I've just realised this is a real sort of all corners of the United Kingdom. We've got, it's like a bad joke of a Scottishman, an Irishman, an Englishman and a Welshman on the same call. A real United Nations of brains here.
This is what they envisioned. Is it a coincidence that you are Welsh, as is your mascot? Is that... Okay, I wasn't.
I feel like I need to dial up my accent because mine's worn down after 20 odd years of living in London. So,
well, let's take it back a step then. The interview is now happening. That's a good starting point for a podcast. So, when did you start, Paul? I'm always digging into all the TV ad spend and all that. You see it too. And we're talking about all these internet startup companies finally moving to TV, you know, and I was like, that's kind of Go Compare. They had the jingle, a mascot, a TV ad, and they became a thing.
I'm a recent addition to Go Compare, so since May 2020, but obviously a long-time fan of Gio Compareo. Particularly, what's great, as a Welshman living in London, it was great to see a Welsh company on TV and sort of really cutting through and irritating most of the nation, in truth. I think you'll find that Gio is really well-loved in Wales and really hated in England. So.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? And I think it's softened. I think if you go through my tweets, maybe back to when I started at the Drum, by the way, don't do that. I was like, who's this Gio Compareo guy? They're just blasting me with him. He's in my brain. And since then, obviously, everyone knows Go Compare. And their opinions of Gio and the actor portraying him have softened. And that's no accident, is it, Paul?
It is no accident. So I think just to wind back to Geo's history. So Geo was created in 2009 and he was created by a creative duo, Chris and Sean Wilkins, who have got a long history in creating sort of brand mascots. They were responsible for the Direct Line telephone, for Sheila's Wheels. And I think Chris was actually involved in the Smash Monsters, you know, the Martians, back in the 70s and 80s. So, you know, they've got an amazing story behind them. And I think he was obviously developed to be a bit of an earworm, to grab people's attention and really stand out. But I think over the years, what's happened is he's become like Marmite. Everybody who lives in Wales, I think, knows Wyn Evans as a BBC Radio Wales presenter. He's quite a big celebrity across the bridge. But in England, he's just, you know, this Italian opera singer that sings at the most inopportune moments. So I think in 2015, he was voted the most irritating sort of, we got the accolade for the most irritating ad on TV. So we've tried, certainly since I joined in 2020, we've made a real concerted effort to try and humanize him, I guess, and soften those sort of rough edges and make the country fall in love with him all over again. Because I think at the outset, everybody thought he was amazing. It's just after he's sung at you for 5 years, I think it did begin to wear people down somewhat. So he sings less these days. And his alter ego, Mr. Wyn Evans, acts as like a nice human interface, a nice counterbalance to Geo's sort of excitability. So I think you're right, he has softened a lot quite recently, and you know, efforts continue to soften him even further.
Well, and we will get into them. Paul, he probably doesn't need to sing anymore, because every time I see him, the song is playing. That's the earworm, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the earworm. It's that instant recall. It's brilliant.
Well, keep softening. It becomes no less forgettable. No less memorable, I should say.
Yeah.
Oops, I said the opposite thing of what I meant to do. And that's where we come to Garrett. How long have you been working on this case? A brief client, I should say. I know you recently got a nice extension there. It takes us into 2024. Yeah,
it was. We've been working with GoCompares since 2018. So Geo well predates our relationship with those guys. But as you say, it's been a really successful relationship over that time, and as testament to kind of a extension beyond those the initial agreement. I think the brief when we started working with GoCompare, you know, the aggregator space is one of the most competitive markets out there in terms of advertising. You mentioned it earlier, John. It's almost like the original, you know, the blue ocean, red ocean type analogy. It's like the original red ocean, that suddenly all this data on people was available, and then there was a mad rush to get in there, and it was like, you know, it's a real war of attrition. You know, it's eat or be eaten in that market. And the comms, that's as a business market, that's the case, but as a comms market, it's like that as well. You know, it's a really heavy effective share of voice, excess share of voice type market, and obviously there's a very finite amount of, it's a mature market, there's a finite, so you're constantly fighting for the same people, which makes for a really competitive comms landscape. So in Geo, as Paul said, we had something that was building up really good saliency and awareness and top of mind awareness, but it had really started to almost work against them. The nadir sort of being, as Paul said, in 2015. So our brief when we came on was really, really smart media to really punch above our weight. You know, the meerkats outspend us 4-5 to 1. But yeah, so I think it's, there was a, the first and foremost, the bedrock of the strong relationship has been just really smart media. You know, it's a really tough competitive market, being materially outspent by the competition. How do we make inroads into that? And the early relationship was very much about proving that out, and all of the really smart media. But then it became more of a comms challenge rather than a media challenge. And as Paul said, how do we build out what we have, but not without losing all of its attributes? And there's a few experiments. As you know, we tried to kill Geo at one stage was killed, and then, you know, and then actually in a strange way, like all these things, sort of beautiful constraint, the pandemic hitting and the practical considerations of how you can actually shoot an ad meant that we had to shoot it in a much more creative way. The guys had to shoot it in a much more creative way, taking no credit for that at all, just to be clear. But the beautiful constraint of that pushed them down a creative route that you did have Wynn and Geo, you know, practically in COVID, that was pretty much as the guys could do. And then there was just a really neat reaction to that that looked like it was really warming up the brand, and it was starting. And then it felt like, then as I said, it became more a comms brief to go, well, actually there's something in this. How do we actually make it a bit more entertaining? How do we keep the attention grabbing elements of Geo and Go Compare, but make it a bit more likable and turn that tanker around?
So that's 13 years in the making. We've found the balance that perhaps we're very happy with. And it all came from a limitation, a challenge, pandemic challenge overcame. Excellent. And I wonder if you can, either of you, reflect on some of the highlights of your partnership so far. Obviously, we're going to get into interactive quiz idents or whatever you choose to call them very soon. But is there anything else we should be paying attention to?
So my reflection on partnership with media agency is I've worked with so many media agencies over the years, and I've had some really fantastic partnerships. What I've enjoyed working with Hearts and Science on is we never underestimate the importance of a really good relationship. And I think, you know, we as the team that works on the account at Hearts and Science and my team really click in a way that, you know, I don't think I've had before. We're just all on the same level. It's a very adult relationship. I don't feel like it doesn't feel like the normal agency relationship, but sometimes you can feel a little bit strong-armed into stuff. That's hopefully not a controversial thing to say, but, you know, everybody wants to make a buck in this industry. So sometimes you feel like, I have personally felt like some of the suggestions and some of the work I've done with previous agencies hasn't always been mutually beneficial in a way. So I think the thing that I like about Hearts is everything's on the table. It feels very open. It feels very respectful. I feel like we have a voice in there, and the guys at Hearts will take our feedback. They understand the cadence of the business and understand, I think for any agency, for anybody who works in an agency that hasn't worked client side, sometimes understanding the commercial pressures that you're under as a marketing team can just evade the agency in a way, and it's sort of understandable. I think what I like about Hearts is you can have those commercial conversations and be really honest about what is happening in the business. And we are really pragmatic about how we change course at any given point when those pressures arise. And it just feels really natural and good. And so I like that. And that was the reason I wanted to extend the working relationship with Hearts, because I don't think you can buy that sort of relationship easily. So when you've got it, you've got to value it and grow it.
Well, as you said earlier, when you're being outspent, was it 5-1 by what I'll call an oligarch meerkat, for legal reasons, is not actually that. Yeah, the relationship's very important. So that brings us to lots of interesting executions, and I'll go to Garrett to give us a brief describer of the interactive sponsorship quiz ident, word, family fortunes. Do better than that, please. Thank you.
I'll try, but you're factually correct on it. But I think we cottoned on to this idea about the interactive between the two, but the media challenge that I mentioned at the start still remained. It was like we had this and we could just put it out in display ads in various spaces, and we did to an extent. But there was always an element of how much we could, with all these things and, like, you know, the clues in the heart and science, actually the ampersand is really important in our business. It's like, how do we pour oil on it in a mix of really good media, really good, the science, and then the creativity? How do we dial them together? And the the thing about the pandemic, the other thing the pandemic rose, and it's well documented that, you know, the volatility in the TV market, again, this sort of beautiful constraint, but opportunistic mindset that we had, meant that actually sponsorship was a really good opportunity for us. There was, it was a bit of a safe haven, if you like. It was a guarantee. It was, you know, all these things, but they quickly became gold bars in a sense in the market. Cause it's like, right, I can guarantee X many impacts and people watching it, let's just buy it. So we didn't want to go down that route either. So we approached ITV, and Family Fortunes was a really good, ticked all the media boxes. But again, it was a case of, we just didn't, it wasn't just a media buy, it, there was this creative platform. So then we arrived, we worked with ITV and our branded content, OMG branded content team at Drum. And obviously the team at Good Compare, we all worked that. And Thames TV were involved as well. And we all sort of built out this new creative platform of, you know, the putting Geo on, if Geo on Family Fortune. So the kind of the Our Survey Says became an interactive game show in the Ident. And that's the essence of it. So, you know, you had, if you haven't seen it, it's four different bespoke ads that were created, and, you know, Geo's family and Wynn's family, you know, answered the questions, and they'd have a bit of, you know, Gino De Campo was in the middle of things. And the top answer would always be missing. And then that would be the kind of, that would be the entry mechanic for the competition, and people could win prizes and holidays and all this sort of stuff. So it was that sort of really interactive, really good fit of the two families, the backgrounds, the comedy that is implicit within Geo. But then this sort of enter, and then it pulled through into this actual sponsored items. We took Geo and Wynn out on the road and actually asked real people about it. So it was always the strength of the idea also allowed us to extend it even further than that.
It does seem like a perfect idea, not to suck up to my podcast guests, well done, but you've got Gino and Geo, you've got that sponsorship you've bought into, and you're like, right, how do we use this in a smart way? And maybe we should get a bit more into the interactivity there and how people engage with it. Now, when I was watching demos of this, these Ident, just to remind me before the podcast, I think I saw 4 or 5 different versions of it on YouTube. Random people had just filmed them and put them on YouTube, which is, and to me, an indicator of success, because I spend most of my life trying to find Ident on YouTube and no one really films them. Anyway, as an aside, how could people interact with these quizzes? You know, what's some of the metrics you could perhaps share from it? And yeah, what sort of uplift would you get from doing such an execution?
So in terms of the interaction, I suppose from a, it worked on so many different levels. So the actual Ident themselves, and there were 8 Ident that sort of bookended the hour-long program. So all of those were about basically Geo taking his little van around Kingston-upon-Thames, in fact, and asking people very simple questions about insurance I think very simple, introductory, basic, but fun questions about why insurance. So I think from a pure sort of intellectual point of view, from an interactivity, sort of non-digital interactivity point of view, what that did for us was make what is potentially quite a dull topic, insurance, I mean, it's not the most exciting topic in the world, but it made it fun. And I think we were trying to get people to think about insurance in a different way. I think in a lot of advertising, insurance is sort of demonized to some extent, and insurers are demonized. And we, GoCompare is founded by people who have worked in the insurance industry for a long, long time. You know, it's not just a digital funnel. There's a huge amount of expertise within the organization. And we wanted to surface that in some ways. And often in the past, Geo has undermined the seriousness of the category. So we wanted to set the balance straight without it being too serious. So I think what we were trying to do is to get people to think about insurance and think about it in a sort of a utility way. You know, insurance is a good thing, and it covers you for all those really silly things that you don't think about. So we wanted people to have like a positive mindset towards it. So I think the 8 Ident helped us achieve that in some way and sort of lift insurance out of dull into actually quite interesting and fun. And then in terms of then the 4 competition pieces that we did, I guess the idea of that as well was to show that we could entertain and almost contextually talk about insurance in an entertaining way. So I think the verbatims that we had back from loads of customers around the 4 60-second spots was that they didn't actually realise it wasn't part of Family Fortune's game because it just felt like such an extension of it. And I think that's where, again, the sponsorship worked so well because it was so contextual. You know, you used the game show format to get people to think a little bit harder about insurance and do it in a really fun way. And the whole setup within the four pieces was that, you know, Geo and Gino and Wynn would sort of end up in some sort of mini squabble, unable to answer any of the questions. And the question would be referred back to the public. So the public then had the opportunity to come onto ITV's website and enter a competition and be part of the selection to win one of the big prizes. And we had four prizes over the 4 weeks. So that worked really well. We also had these mini vignettes. So we had some off-screen fun with Gino that we managed to capture along the way. And we created vignettes for social as well that were either little mini teasers for the shows themselves or just little fun reminders that we were going to be on TV on Sunday night. And we tried to be quite commercially minded about it. Half of them drove to ITV's website. Some of them drove to our website and try and sort of show people the range of products that we had as well. So we were just trying to use the audience in a really sort of thoughtful way. So some of the vignettes that were more designed around insurance thoughts, we sort of pushed to our website, but then some of the more sort of generic, have a bit of fun and join us on Sunday night, pushed towards ITV's website. So that seemed to work really well. As I say, the response we got from the public was excellent. And, you know, we talked a little bit at the beginning about the Marmite nature of Gio's character. Well, over the years, we've seen the irritation factor decline. But I think on Family Fortunes itself, it was something like, and I'm going to get the number wrong, was it 79% of people weren't irritated by the sponsorship, which was just thumbs up for us. You know, it's like people really, really enjoyed it. People liked the sort of, almost Wynn is the guy that teases out some of the questions. He's the role of the consumer and he teases out some of the questions that people might have about insurance. And Geo is almost like the high fiver that says, yeah, you've made the right choice. Good for you. And I think it really sort of cemented that relationship between them and just, yeah, changed the nature of the relationship, I think, between the two. It was great.
Excellent. And Garrett, this all sounds like quite hard work to deliver. Why don't you tell us how hard the work was and what sort of challenges you had to overcome in delivering it?
It was, I mean, whenever you do something like this, there's always, you always go into it with your eyes open, knowing that it's going to be a wee bit over and above. I think the team at ITV at Thames TV were brilliant. And in from a Hearts perspective, the guys at Drum at OMG who led the development of it as well, they're experts at this. So they were fantastic. So I think actually it was not too bad. Like there was the usual challenges around, you know, negotiating it and developing it. And then as Paul said, we activated a lot of the IP. So there's that element to it as well. Gino was on holiday, I think, in Tuscany when we wanted to shoot. So we had to curtail this. Like, that was probably the hardest part of everything, negotiating with Gino's family to come back from holiday in Tuscany. But it was, with all these things, you go into it with your eyes open, but you bank on the disproportionate results, which we definitely had. You know, Paul talked about some of them, but we almost knew we had to overreach because we were coming from a position that we're on the back foot with Geo being irritated by people. We had to push it even harder to be even more entertaining, to just to almost get normality, you know, to really move the dial on it. So, but the sense of humour, like almost 60% people thought it was funny and had a good sense of humour, and almost like 95-94%, something like that, said they just liked it, you know, and it's a real turnaround story from 2015, when it was, you know, actually liking an ad, and in this day and age with so much clutter and so much ad avoidance and what have you, having an ad or creating content that people actually enjoy is is and crucially works and translates into brand metrics and business metrics is really, you got to go over and above these days really to get to that.
Absolutely. And maybe we can reflect on the wider TV advertising space. Obviously, this campaign extended the quiz a bit, made people laugh, you know, showed them a fan favourite in new light. Some people's fan favourites anyway. But maybe it's worth reflecting, Paul, on why it's just worth going that extra mile with your TV advertising or your sponsorship to get that extra punch. We know how competitive a market you're in, but just more generally, perhaps, just maybe you could tell them how they should think about the sponsorships.
I think for me, sponsor, it's funny really, because you have to make sure you get the right property. I think I see a lot of sponsorships on TV where there is very little synergy between the brand and the sponsorship property, and you know it's a bit of an afterthought. And I think if you can't tie, if as a consumer you can't make the tie between the brand and the sponsorship, that's already a bit of a negative. So I think you have to be really careful about choosing something that really does extend and say something about your product. You, at the end of the day, you're trying to borrow somebody else's equity to make your product bigger and more loved or whatever it is your objective is. So you have to be really careful about what you choose. I think, you know, Garrett alluded to it earlier, it's great value. TV, spot TV costs are rising all the time. It's a great way to get a sort of guaranteed spot, you know, a prime time spot. So Sunday evening was great for us. You know, it's a family time, everybody's watching. So I think it's a sort of shortcut and a short circuit into getting quite a good repeat audience every time. But I think more so, it sort of blurs the lines between brand advertising and entertainment. And I think, you know, it just, for me, didn't feel like advertising. It was almost like subliminal in a way that, you know, people just enjoyed it and took a lot out of it and thought it was fun. And as Garrett said, you know, you had some really great response rates to it. So it doesn't feel intrusive. And so it feels like you're entertaining people and you're doing a great job of entertaining. You know, we've got a great brand mascot who can be entertaining. So we've sort of got a bit of a head start on everyone else. And we're a fun brand. So, you know, it allowed us to amplify that in a way that spot TV advertising doesn't always allow you to do. You know, it's really hard to get messages across. Anyone who's in marketing will tell you, you know, if you don't have access to 60 seconds, it's quite hard to get a really strong message across in 20 or 30 seconds. So sponsorship allows you, I think, to say a bit more about who you are and, you know, sort of make friends with consumers. And that's what I really liked about it. It felt like at the end of the run of Family Fortunes that people just were a bit sort of smiled when you mentioned Go Compare rather than, you know, just stuck their fingers in their ears or whatever. So it did feel like we'd really moved the dial on it. And it, as I say, it was a really neat way of doing that. And it was super creative as well. You know, Garrett talked about, you know, had some of the problems that we'd had, the challenges in getting it live. We did it so quickly. And in a way, that made it even more fun because it was real seat your pants stuff from an internal perspective. But I would do it again in a flash.
And please do share when you do. Something anecdotally that I've been hearing, and I'm not a media buyer, so I'm just an ignorant journalist, really, is the sponsorship seemed to be the easier way into the TV market right now with all the fragmentation, the volatility in pricing. Maybe I can sort of use an analogy. It's like setting your gas tariff before the rise or, you know. And then for the first time ever, I won a press release from Channel 4 the other day. The brands announced that it managed to win a sponsorship or like secure a sponsorship, and it was a very competitive space. Like there was lots of brands vying for the same sponsorship, which anecdotally I feel like that's not always the way. Garrett, could you perhaps maybe shine a light on the competition in that space and why sponsorship is such a TV sponsorship, I should say, such a hot property right now. You've touched on it a bit, but it's just good to sort of go a bit deeper there.
Yeah, I think just building on the point from earlier, it's the volatility that we're seeing in the pandemic and the you know, which we're behaving, we're coming out of, but we're still, there's still a lot of volatility in the market, but also obviously plainly wider socio and political and challenges that the world is facing right now. There's a lot of volatility in the market, right? And because of TV being a supply and demand dynamic pricing model, it's incredibly difficult a difficult market to navigate for any media buyer. So as a result, sponsorship, you're sort of guaranteed, and that's all of that. But then you in normal time, so to speak, there's still you know, decrease of commercial impacts because of the rise of SVOD and fragmentation of viewing. So that's even before all of the sort of outside of media industry challenges that we've got. So in sponsorship, it's really gone back to kind of, as Paul said, you're buying and not a guaranteed audience at a set price, and you've got a pretty robust read on how many millions or the hundreds of thousands or whatever people that you're going to get, and the audience is a returning audience, at its most basic level, it's quite a risk averse media opportunity. It's a kind of, I said, that's why the gold bars or setting your tariff, like they're all good analogies of the advantage of it. I said, I think just in terms of maximizing the value of sponsorship, Paul touched upon it. It's the thinking about it like a partnership rather than a really, really smart media buy. It is that, but the disproportionate returns you get is when you think of it like a partnership. Like what credibility, what audience, what tone of voice or context can I borrow that I need for my brand as a result of buying that sponsorship? And going back to Family Fortunes, we wanted to dial up the entertainment and likability factor. And that's why ITV, in more general terms, but more specifically Family Fortunes, was a really good, really lighthearted, really enjoyable, you know, pretty funny, real people. All those things were things that we wanted to, as Paul said, like insurance being something that people don't really want to engage in. How do we make that entertaining? There was a neat stretch for us in that sense as well. So I think the sponsorship market is really, really buoyant just because of the, you know, the media economics of it, but really making the return on investment that even better, it's doing it through the lens of what am I actually getting implicitly from the property, from the audience, from the channel.
Excellent. Well, that's really helpful, especially seeing as I seem to have a podcast committed to talking to people about TV sponsorships. Glad it's buoyant. Paul, were you about to jump in there, or can I hit you with my final question?
No, I was just going to add, I think it's that contextual nature as well of what you do. If you can lean into zeitgeist at the moment and sort of really use your sponsorship partner to deliver that sort of, you know, that feeling that it's relevant now, and that you're talking about something that, you know, people are watching Family Fortunes are sort of more adept at absorbing that sort of message in that time. And I think, you know, for us, that was the biggest thing. I think it was contextually, it just felt really right, and it really brought the message to life as well, in a way, as I said earlier, that sometimes you struggle to do in spot TV advertising.
Interesting way to think about it. And a final question, Paul. Throughout the conversation, we've talked about how the public has a love-hate relationship with Geo, and you've been very frank in your discussion about how you've got Geo working for the brand again, but does GoCompare have a love-hate relationship with Geo? Or are you finally in a happy place with them and we'll be seeing them on screens for years to come?
Yeah, I think the strange thing is that everybody, when I joined GoCompare, you know, all of my friends and family, the first question they asked is, are you going to kill him off? And that's always the question that people ask you. And I think as a marketer, you cannot underestimate the value of a character like Geo Campario. You know, he is shorthand for GoCompare, and you'd be an absolute fool to kill him off. I think evolve him, yes, and I think that's what we've done over the last couple of years, you know, and that's been a team effort. You know, Chris and Sean Wilkins, who were involved in his creation, Wynn himself, everybody's contributed to that evolution. I think everybody recognises that the character needs to evolve to keep people's interest. So, you know, Gokenpei doesn't have a love-hate relationship with Joe Campario. You know, we embrace him and we want to work with him and evolve him and modernize him and take him forward. And, you know, it could be that in 2 years' time, you see him in a different format. You see him in, you know, we might have evolved him again, but I certainly wouldn't be an advocate of throwing the baby out of the bathwater, as they say. I think, you know, he's a really valuable asset. He's part of our brand heritage. You know, I liken it to Colonel Sanders for Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know, and Colonel Sanders, I think, is still a watermark for the brand, and he's still part of the brand makeup and he's still part of the brand assets. And I think that, you know, Gio will always be part of our brand makeup, you know. But who knows what tomorrow brings in terms of what that looks like, or, you know, how we're moving forward again. I think where we've got to at the moment, where Wynn, I think I said earlier, is the voice of the consumer, and Gio is, you know, Gio is the embodiment of Gokenpei. He wants you to make the right choice. He doesn't advocate you getting the cheapest deal. He advocates you getting the right deal. Because, you know, in insurance, it shouldn't be about price. It should be getting the insurance that suits you. And it might be that to do that, you have to pay a little bit more. And what Gio wants is that people navigate the choice that's out there and make the right choice. And, you know, he high fives them for doing that. And I think, you know, he will forever be that character who wants people to succeed and make the right choice for them. So I think he's going to be around for a while to come.
That was really interesting there from the both of you. We had fun, yeah. No, anyway, finally, just to thank you both for coming on. I'm sure I'll speak to both of you again soon. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Drums TV Talks podcast, and you heard it here first. Gio Campario is here to stay. If you want to read more Future of TV content, you can check it out on thedrum.com, Future of TV, and I'm sure you do. Thanks for listening, and look forward to hearing from you again. Or should I say, you hearing from me. Goodbye.